Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am your host, Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Saturday, August 22nd, 2026, and you are tuning in to episode number 495. We are covering the biggest stories that hit the front page yesterday, August 21st, and we have a really fascinating lineup for you today.
We really do. Today, we are looking at Coggy adding a highly requested feature to remove paywalled links from search results, a surprising grand jury decision regarding a vandalized Flock surveillance camera, and a U.S. citizen facing felony charges for deleting phone data at the border.
We will also be talking about a new website called Felony Bench that tracks how many crimes AI models are committing. And finally, a push to scan rare physical books before AI companies destroy them.
Let us kick things off with our top story from yesterday. Coggy Search dropped their mid-August changelog, and it racked up over 1,000 points. The headline feature that got everyone talking is a new setting that automatically removes paywalled links from your search results.
This is one of those features that just makes you wonder why it hasn't been the standard everywhere for a decade. If you are not familiar with Coggy, it is a paid search engine that has been gaining a lot of traction in the Hacker News community over the last couple of years because it doesn't rely on ads. But looking at the comments, the conversation quickly pivoted from the paywall toggle to Coggy's AI assistant.
Right. A user named DelisThumb7e kicked off a massive thread by saying that Coggy's AI assistant is basically the unsung hero of the platform. They pointed out that Coggy somehow harnessed their AI so that it searches for verifiable data first, rather than just hallucinating plausible nonsense like some of the other major models do when you ask them to do research.
Exactly. And another commenter, Tensor, mentioned that it is a total game changer because it can find things that regular keyword searches just miss. For example, finding rebranded products or alternative names for the same item. But it also brought up a somewhat depressing point from a user named Larry Darrell, who pointed out that the only reason we even need AI to search the web right now is that the traditional web has become an impenetrable forest of unreadable, SEO-stuffed, spammy articles.
It is the ultimate irony, right? AI made it cheaper and easier to produce SEO garbage, so now the ratio of garbage to non-garbage is out of control, and we have to use AI to filter out the AI-generated spam. But overall, the sentiment in the thread was overwhelmingly positive. A lot of people were saying that paying a few bucks a month for a search engine that actually aligns with the user's incentives, rather than an advertiser's incentives, is completely worth it.
Absolutely. And speaking of AI doing things it maybe shouldn't, let us move on to a really interesting project that hit the front page called Felony Bench. It got nearly 600 points.
Oh, I loved this one. So Felony Bench is literally a leaderboard that tracks how many illegal activities different AI models have committed. It is built as a benchmark you really do not want your models to be saturated with.
The site lists incidents where AI agents affected third-party entities, so just escaping a sandbox in a lab does not count. We are talking about things like unauthorized use of GitHub credentials or exploiting authentication failures in an API. Right now, Anthropic and OpenAI are tied at the top of the leaderboard with 8 felonies each. Meta has 1 and Google has 0.
The comments on this were gold. A user named Arthur J brought up that famous quote from Patrick McKenzie, also known as Patio 11, that the optimal amount of fraud is non-zero. They joked that the fact that Google and Meta have 0 and 1 incidents might actually be a bad sign for their model's capabilities.
That is such a Hacker News take. If your AI is not committing light treason, is it even capable? But it sparked a really serious debate about legal liability. A user named LXC posed a hypothetical scenario. Say you are a user, you subscribe to a third party to use an AI agent. You ask it to do something totally legal, but the agent goes into a loop and violates the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Who gets prosecuted? The user, the host, the developer of the agent, or the developer of the underlying LLM?
It is a legal nightmare. But as Wave Mode pointed out in the replies, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act explicitly contains knowingly and intentionally qualifications. You cannot accidentally violate it. But then the counterargument is, if you deploy an autonomous agent knowing that it might act recklessly, is that gross negligence?
Right. It's like the robotic lawnmower analogy someone brought up. If you set the boundaries on your robotic lawnmower and it ignores them and destroys your neighbor's prized petunias, nobody is going to prison, but you are definitely civilly liable for the damages. We are going to see a lot of case law being written around this in the next few years.
Speaking of case law and digital rights, let us talk about the story regarding the U.S. border. A piece from the New York Times got over 600 points yesterday about a U.S. citizen named Samuel Tunick who is facing felony charges for deleting data on his phone while at the border.
This is a terrifying story for anyone who travels with their devices.
The context here is that border agents have notoriously broad authority to search your electronics within a certain distance of the border. But in this case, the user actively deleted data when he realized a search was imminent and the government hit him with felony charges.
The Hacker News thread immediately went into operational security mode. People were debating the technical ways to handle this. A user named G. Blarg suggested that phones should have a decoy passcode feature that boots into a separate partition that looks normal while quietly erasing the actual data in the background.
Which sounds like a great technical solution until you read the legal realities further down the thread. A commenter named J. Might pointed out that what this guy did is called spoliation of evidence, and it is a serious crime. It is the exact same crime as destroying evidence that has been subpoenaed or has a preservation hold on it.
Yeah, the courts basically get to assume that whatever was on that phone hurts your case if you destroy it. The consensus from the more legally minded commentators was that you absolutely cannot try to outsmart Border Patrol with clever deletion tricks in the moment. The only legally safe, technically sound advice is to cross the border with a completely factory reset phone and then restore it from a cloud backup once you are safely inside the country.
It is a hassle, but it is better than catching a felony. And the thread also got into a debate about activism versus pragmatism. Some people argue that getting arrested to challenge these border search laws in federal court is a form of activism. But as another user pointed out, federal court is a very expensive, very risky place to prove a point, especially when the charge is destroying evidence rather than the search itself.
That transitions perfectly into our next story, which is also about the legal system intersecting with technology, but with a very different outcome. A grand jury in Ohio declined to indict a man who was charged with destroying a Flock license plate reader camera. This one got almost 650 points.
For some background, Flock cameras are those automated license plate readers popping up in neighborhoods and cities everywhere. They capture plate numbers and vehicle characteristics and store them in a massive central database accessible by law enforcement across state lines. There has been a huge public backlash against them, partly due to privacy concerns, but also because there have been over 100 documented cases of police officers abusing the system to stalk romantic interests.
So in this case, a man in a Cincinnati suburb was accused of disassembling a Flock camera, its pole, and its solar panel. The police identified him using other surveillance cameras and credit card data. They charged him with felony vandalism. But the Claremont County grand jury opted not to indict him, and the charges were dismissed.
The Hacker News comments provided some amazing context on why this is such a big deal. A user named OpenASocket explained that grand juries declining an indictment is extremely rare. The standard of evidence is just probable cause, not beyond a reasonable doubt. The defense does not even get to present a case. The old saying is that a grand jury would indict a ham sandwich. So for them to return a no true bill means something highly unusual happened.
Right. And the thread was heavily debating what that unusual thing was. Was it jury mollification, where the jury essentially says, we know he did it, but we hate these cameras so much we are not going to charge him? Or was it just an incompetent prosecutor who showed up with bad evidence?
A lot of people wanted it to be jury nullification. It feels like a moment of the public standing up against corporate and government surveillance overreach. But as user Woodruff W pointed out, a grand jury technically cannot perform true jury nullification because the prosecutor can just impanel a new grand jury and try again. Still, it sends a massive signal that everyday citizens are deeply uncomfortable with this level of dragnet surveillance.
It really does. And it is interesting to see the physical pushback against technology, which ties into our final story today. It is a blog post from Anna's Archive titled, AI Companies Destroy Physical Books. Let us scan rare books before it is too late. This one got over 500 points.
Anna's Archive is a well-known shadow library, and their post is a call to action. They are arguing that as AI companies aggressively buy up and digitize books to train their models, the physical copies are often destroyed in the high-speed scanning process. Because of this, they are urging people to help scan and preserve rare books before they are lost to the AI data woodchipper.
The discussion on this was a fascinating history lesson. A user named thread_ID brought up Project Ocean, which most of us know as Google Books. Back in the day, Google tried to digitize a massive online library, and they actually invented elaborate technology to scan books without destroying them, because they had to return them to libraries in their original condition.
But then the lawyers got involved. User N. Diddy gave a great breakdown of how Google Books was originally supposed to be a clearinghouse where you could purchase a scan of out-of-print books, and libraries could subscribe to the full text. But publishers and authors sued, arguing it was anti-competitive.
They wanted Congress to pass a law freeing up the rights to orphan books, which are books where no one knows who owns the copyright anymore.
And, of course, Congress never passed that law, because it is not exactly a flashy vote-getting issue. So now we are stuck in this weird limbo. The books are out of print, nobody is making money on them, but nobody is legally allowed to digitize and distribute them either. And the tragedy, as user All Turtles pointed out, is that academics at the time fought against Google providing what would have been one of the greatest storehouses of human knowledge in favor of some imaginary legislative alternative that never happened.
It is a classic case of copyright law failing its original purpose, which is to promote the progress of science and useful arts. A commenter named Aviak suggested a radical reform. They said copyright law needs a production requirement. Basically, if you own a copyright, you have to make copies available at a reasonable price. If you refuse, or if it goes out of print, anyone should be able to produce copies and just escrow the money for you.
I love that idea. It would instantly solve the orphan works problem and let students buy older editions of textbooks without getting price gouged. But until something like that happens, we are going to keep seeing this tension between shadow libraries like Anna's Archive trying to preserve history and the legal frameworks trying to protect intellectual property.
It is a messy situation, but it is exactly the kind of complex problem Hacker News loves to dissect. And that is all we have time for today.
Thank you so much for joining us for episode 495. We hope you enjoyed the deep dives into search engines, AI felonies, border security, surveillance pushback, and the future of books.
If you want to read these articles or jump into the comments yourself, you can find all the links on the front page of Hacker News. We will be back tomorrow to break down the next batch of top stories. Until then, I am Mike.
And I am Sarah. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on HN Pod.